Good evening, and welcome to Screen Tone Club, episode 3, recorded on the 5th of August 2018. Whoops, almost I got that wrong. My name is Elliot Page. I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley.
Hello there.
Thanks for joining me again, Andy. Just to catch you up, as this is only our third episode, this is a fortnightly look at MAGA with a focus on joint discussion between the pair of us. We're going to nominate things for each of us to read. We go away and read them, come back and talk about it. We're particularly trying to keep the show a bit on the tighter side, you know, the 45-minute-ish mark, to prevent it from ballooning into another three-hour podcast fest, which, although I'll admit is very handy and nice, sometimes you ain't got 3 hours, quite frankly. We're going to announce titles ahead of time, so you can also read them if you so fancy. As a quick thing, ahead of the actual close down and mentioning it, thank you to everyone who has reviewed or rated us on iTunes or any other podcatching service. As mentioned, this stuff really helps with discoverability and the algorithms and is really, really greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. If you haven't already, consider yourself thanked in advance if you consider yourself willing to do that little kindness for us. Regardless, let's move on to, well, what we're going to talk about in this show. So we have two series, well, volumes we're going to look at. My pick first was 5 Centimeters Per Second, the adaptation slash like other take on the Makoto Shinkai film written by Shinkai himself. And your pick, Andy, is volume one of So I'm a Spider, So What? The manga. Not the light novel. Yeah, we had to make. I nearly bought the light novel. Spoilers. I didn't, but nearly. Really close. Oops. They need to stop using the same art for both things, please. Or I need to read properly. Anyway, do you mind if I take it away with 5 Centimeters Per Second, Andy?
Please do. I'm kind of dying and chomping at the bit to talk about this myself, so we should probably get straight into it.
True. So, kind of same, honestly. It's kind of wild. So, 5 Centimeters Per Second, as mentioned previously, is a feature film of quite a few years back now, by Makoto Shinkai, who has most recently directed and released the mega hit Your Name, which came out, was it last year or year before now, Andy? Holy moly.
Year before.
Oh man, I feel old. 2016's hit Your Name. And so this was an earlier work of Shinkai's, and it was an approximately 70-minute long movie split into three vague parts about love and basically loss or longing, missed connections, you know, people twisting in the wind. I have written about it at least twice before now in my previous anime reviewing enterprises. And frankly, while I was blown away with it on first watching, it's kind of gone down in my distinction ever since, where I get more annoyed about the fact that the third act isn't actually an act. It's just an AMV bolted on the end and there's not much closure to it. And for reasons that are also echoed in the manga, which I'll get into now, but it's very, very pretty. If you've got a high def TV, totally worth it. So 5 Centimeters Per Second, this it was written after the fact by Makoto Shinkai, and I don't have the artist's name to hand. I can't read my handwriting, which is a great sign on my notes. But so it stars primarily a character called Takaki Tono, who is a boy. When you first see him, he's in the upper echelons of primary school slash kindergarten. And you also have with him another character called Akari Shinohara, who is his childhood friend, basically, and they meet while in lower school and become friends because both of them are transfers. They've both been like airlifted into this school, and neither of them know anyone really. They're both used to moving around a lot and having parents that have to move for work, and so they kind of get on very well, and they share the same taste in books and talk about insects and space flight and everything and everything. And they're quite, you know, it's a sort of childhood heart, love heart sort of thing, you know, childhood crossed lovers, you know, first love, yada. Until Akari has to move to the far north of Japan because basically her dad gets a new job, and her attempts to try and find a way to still maintain where she is go awry. And the first arc basically is the journey of Takaki to go and see Akari in her new digs in the north in the middle of a blazing snowstorm. You then go on to the second part, which takes Takaki to a new area on an island in the south of Japan. Again, sorry, I've forgotten the names. It's on the south sort of Japan, kind of in the boonies, and meets Sumida Kanae, who is a girl who really likes surfing and is kind of the tomboyish, really sort of very cutesy, but doesn't see herself as a very feminine girl, and the kind of travails thereof, and it more or less moves into her orbit for that section, although it does break up every now and then. And then you move on to a third part, which in the movie didn't really exist and was an AMV. It was basically a music video. And the third part is the largest part and for me the most interesting section, because it goes into seeing Takaki as a 20-year-old, like a young adult, like an actual like post-grad who is in the workforce in Tokyo and is, you know, getting through life as an actual adult, and the travails thereof, and his then girlfriend Risa, who I don't think gets a surname, poor gal. But from there, so the main problem I have with this series or volume even is, so a quick note, it's 471 pages. It's an omnibus edition volume, honking great, big tome. I kind of regret picking this, to be quite honest. I'm very sorry, Andy, for making you having to read through the entire thing. I hope you didn't mind, but we'll find out soon. So that was one problem I have. It was very long, but also the main problem I have of it is that Takaki Tono sucks. He's an awful main character. He is utterly inert in every regard and at every point. And like, one of the characters actually calls him out on it, Risa does, towards the end, saying, "You don't have any feelings and don't show anything. You just cover it up with kindness and cause everyone pain around you," which is entirely accurate and is intensely frustrating, because all these characters like are having to basically escape this one guy who weirdly manages to ensnare them in his orbit. And then he basically platitudes them into the point of emotional breakdown because he's wearing them down so much. And even he, the whole time, is all very, "Woe is me. What am I doing? Oh no." But not even at that level of cognizance. He's just kind of existing, but again, hurting everyone around him in the really irritating and very blasé manner. I don't know if you picked up on that as much as I did, Andy, but it drove me up the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of came at it from a slightly different angle. I mean, I feel like in the first act, kind of the initial story, you know, when he's sort of in primary school, it's like, he's not overly passive. I mean, you know, the main kind of thrust of that arc is after Akari moves away, you know, he goes on this incredibly long kind of cross-country journey before she moves again even further away to kind of see her. And yes, he kind of botches / doesn't confess his feelings to her. But I feel like that at least happens in a kind of realistic way, that it's like, hey, for a kid that age, you're probably going to bottle it or screw it up or et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of like, I feel like the first act, he's perfectly fine as a character. The second story arc, I can kind of give him something of a pass, because like, hey, he's still a teenager. He's, you know, he's had this bad experience. So he's clearly kind of, he's keeping his distance from people on a kind of deeper emotional level. And, you know, I think you can argue either way whether he's kind of fully aware of what he's doing and what is happening to the people around him at that point. By the time you get to the third act, though, I'm kind of totally on board with you that Tono basically turns into kind of a pretty major asshole, because he's old enough to know exactly what he's doing. It's pretty clear that he's aware of like what he's dragging people through, but yeah, like you say, he's completely passive and does nothing about it. And so that was kind of the shift for me, particularly compared to the anime, which, you know, like you say, it basically has no third act. It's just a music video, which was a weird side note. I could swear I remembered that third act having more to it, but I actually rewatched it after reading this manga for completeness's sake and was like, oh yeah, it is literally just a music video and tells you nothing. Whereas this book, this manga adaptation, does dig into that character and what he becomes, and what he becomes is not a very pleasant person at all. So yeah, like I feel like for most of this book, I can give him some kind of pass for the way he goes about doing things. But in that third act, it's kind of, I almost have pauses to like whether this was sort of the original version of the story Makoto Shinkai wrote and then kind of took a step back. And it's like, I can't have this be the character of this film, because the way he ends up is kind of detestable in a way, and like nobody's going to buy into it, and that's why it ended up with like the open-ended ending that the anime version has, because it's quite revealing about what Takaki is and what he turns into, and it ain't very pleasant really when you actually look at it in totality.
Yeah, I'm with you about the movie, where I was always, again, whenever I've revisited it, the sort of flash cut to music video always seems to come earlier. And I'm like, no, it's always been here. Like, the movie hasn't changed in between viewings, dude. That'd be pretty special, but it ain't. imagine that, man. For interactive. But I'm with you definitely about the first part, where, at that point it's still innocent and it's still quite nice, and it's a very much a case of longing and like not knowing what you've got until it's gone sort of thing. And Takaki in particular being unable to deal with any of it because he just doesn't have any other kind of like tools in his toolkit. And like you mentioned, he has a letter he's supposed to give to her because he knows himself that he's no good at speaking. So he wants to give Akari a letter, which you get bits and pieces of in a slightly fragmented, irritating manner. But he loses it at one point and he can't bring himself to rewrite it. And he's kind of, even on the journey up to see Akari that fateful night, he's kind of already losing it. It seems like he's already resigning himself to long-term basic self-irreverence or irrelevance even. And then the second arc, because I really like Kane an awful lot, you know, the tomboyish like surfer girl. I really like that character, which is why it irritates me so much that you basically have this weird leftover character from another series who's kind of stuck. Like, I realized at one point that if the middle arc with Kanae was a standalone one-shot, one-volume manga just about the fickleness of love and beating yourself up against this complete plasterboard wall of a guy, I'd find that way more engaging rather than as the middle act of a very annoying manga where...
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, that second arc, in both the film and the manga adaptation, like, is by far my favourite part of it. I think it's kind of why I've always had a soft spot for it, because, yeah, I'm with you, like, I really like Kanae's character. And I feel like, you know, taking it from her point of view, it's actually a really good story of unrequited love. Like, anime and manga often tends to go through the same kind of motions when it comes to that stuff of like, oh, I see this guy, it's love at first sight, I really like him, I kind of like follow him around and try to stay in his orbit, but he like pays me no attention whatsoever. And it always kind of feels like unrealistic as to like, well, why do you still like this guy? Because he's either a jerk to you or just like ignores you. Whereas at least in this case, yes, she has the love at first sight thing, but she kind of spends time with him and he's nice to her. So it's like, he's not completely disinterested in me. Like, he hangs out with me. He like talks to me about stuff. So, you know, this doesn't seem so bad. And it kind of, it feels very genuine that it's like, oh, okay, you know, maybe this guy is, you know, somebody that I am actually genuinely interested in, that I've actually fallen for, especially given her own nature, because she's very kind of lost in terms of who she wants to be and what she wants to do. Like, her life is very much kind of on pause because she really has no idea what she wants to do with the rest of her life. She's kind of on this little island. It's like, does she want to stay there or move elsewhere? Like, you know, she really has no direction at all. And in a way, like, all of her direction is kind of thrust in the direction of Takaki just for want of anything else. And so all of that stuff just kind of, I know, it kind of resonates with me on a certain level. Like, I feel like all of that stuff sits pretty well, and I do still really enjoy that arc. And yeah, like, I think if that was a standalone, I'd probably be, you know, have even more praise for it than, like you say, being part of this kind of three act whole. But I guess on that point, like, given that we both like Kanae, what are your feelings on what they do with that character in the third act of this manga?
So the epilogue, the sort of post, yeah, there's the epilogue section, which is right at the very end of the book. And I initially liked it because it showed Kanae as an adult, and I think I should probably stop there before we go any further into spoiling this manga. But suffice to say, I really liked it because I was like, oh, this is interesting. You know, characters finding their way. Character has some ideas about what they don't want to do. And then suffice to say that by the last page, I was really irritated again and kind of just wanted to spike my tablet against the floor of my bedroom. just because I'm like, of course, I knew it was going to happen, but I was still upset. Like, I was still disappointed in that, like, oh, is this the cop out? Okay, fine. It's still in the whole, like, gray area, can interpret any way you want, but I'm still sad that it had to even go that way. You know, it looked like, even though there was a middle bit where I was like, oh, not so sure about the actions here, can I? But then, so not a fan, frankly. I really like I say, I like the opening and I'm like, oh, can I found something? And then I guess not. I don't know. Like, at least she's seeking something out and doing something, unlike Takaki did for the entire rest of the book. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I actually quite like the open-ended kind of climax to the entire thing. Like, I feel like this is a story that would not sit well as either. And then they fell in love and lived happily ever after, then everybody ended up alone. But
so
But as I say, by the same token, like, I feel like Can I in particular kind of gets short shrift with that. Like, it feels very sort of all over the place and a bit wishy-washy in terms of kind of like what is motivating her and kind of the direction she's heading in with that. Like, there's a point, like you, when it starts, it's like, okay, this all seems good. This seems like what I want to see. But then it kind of hedges its bets in a weird way that I feel like in general, like, and there's a sort of a similar open-endedness around kind of Risa and what's going on there, which I think is fine. But in her case, it does feel a bit weird the way that ends up, in a way that I can't quite kind of verbalize.
So for me, the open-ended ending is fine, but it should have ended 3 pages earlier before it did the final sort of king in the tale, where towards the end, it's wrapped up. It's finished all of it. It's got its ducks in a row. It's finished everything off. It has an open-ended moment where you have like a character looking up at the sky and going, well, this is a new start for me. And then immediately unpicks it. And then, you know, does this whole sort of like, oh, is that? And then it ends again, still open-ended, but in a much less interesting way, where it's kind of collapsed the possibility space back on itself before then ending. So for me, okay, I'm going to say it outright, but she sees someone out of the corner of her eye and she stands up to meet them, and it's quite obviously him intending to meet Takaki. Or maybe not. That's the open-ended part. But that being the open-ended part is way less interesting than 3 pages before, when she's made a resolution that she wants to continue doing things, she's liking her job, but she's also turned down this other dude who was after her, and she feels perfectly content with all of that. And it's kind of irritating. It then just sort of goes and just pushes things back in together again at that point.
Yeah, it certainly does a Makoto Shinkai, because he does like to end his films with the kind of chance meeting of characters again. And this is a good example of that not really working out the way you might like.
Yeah, it totally doesn't. It cheapens it. It cheapens the one best part of the entire book. And like, so stupid fandom theory alert, I don't put any actual stock into this, but at one point, like, because the thing about my annoyance with Takaki is that after the like the sort of tangent you go on with Sakanae's middle part, then you've got the remaining 200 pages of like what part 3 would have been, basically. And by about 40 pages in, I was already intensely infuriated with him and felt intensely bad for Risa that she was having to put up with this complete friggin' idiot. And it's clear that Risa herself wasn't very experienced with romance or anything, because man alive, no, I don't think anyone should really put up with that kind of level of neglect, frankly. And just my tangent was, my trajectory was just more and more annoyed and teeth grindy. And, you know, Takaki does get a kind of comeuppance and like a big moment where it all kind of falls apart for him, but it doesn't exactly land on him. Like, all the consequences land around him and he's left to go, oh yeah, I guess I am a problem. But for me, it feels like 100 pages too late, because man, that guy really should have been smacked down much earlier. But also, Again, here's the fandom theory. It almost felt like a confession from Makoto Shinkai at one point. I'm like, wait, the reason why all the rest of the cast are way more interesting and fleshed out than the main character is that maybe this is Makoto Shinkai appearing as Tono and doing some kind of weird apologia for his own romance? I don't know, but I'm not going to say that's true or evidence-backed in any way, but it was a wild theory that popped in my head. And even while I'm saying it out loud now, I don't really believe it, but it seemed to fit the facts and keep me going through when I was really irritated.
Yeah. I certainly find that hard to believe, but hey, stranger things have happened in the sphere of people writing themselves into their work. But yeah, I mean, it's weird. I guess the weird kind of offshoot of that is looking at the manga as a companion piece to the film, where, you know, you don't really see where or how Takaki sort of ends up, other than these odd fleeting glimpses. Like, there is something satisfying is not really the word, but there is something cathartic about saying, oh, okay, so this is where he ended up going, and it turns out he was a jerk, which is still, it's not great, but it's almost like, I guess it's like giving a hungry man a meal of just like, I'll take this because it's better than the nothing that I had previously, which is not, you know, that's damning with faint praise, and that's exactly what I mean to do. But I feel like that's kind of the positive that I took out of it, is like, at least this has an ending in inverted commas. At least I see how these characters end up, even if I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, all the, with the exception of Kanae and her last three pages turn, I mean, the other two female cast members have way better resolutions. Like, Risa has an actual resolution, and you feel intensely bad for her because she's wasted 3 years on this pillock. But Akari has, like, her ending, and, like, you see at one point, like, a page of her in a wedding dress, and you're like, ah, okay, here we go. And, like, they have a moment where the two of them very clearly pass each other on a railway bridge, which, you know, Makoto Shinkai alert. And then she's gone, and it's like, okay, good, that's all you needed to finish that entire thing. Like it almost seems to work for Takaki as well, like that's an important moment, but also it kind of, it picks back up to Akari's story and then goes, okay, yeah, this is all over, like here is her ending and she's fine. So that was actually quite useful to have, whereas, you know, movie version is just
yeah. I mean, to be fair, like rewatching it, the movie version does at least kind of give you those beats, like not in quite as such an overt way, but they do have like
her, oh yeah, you get it in platform. The music video, yeah,
like, you know, talking about a wedding, etc. so you kind of know where that's going, but yeah, I don't know. It's a strange old thing, but you know, I do prefer the way the manga ends to the anime. But like I say, that's perhaps not really, you know, dishing out a lot of praise, given that the ending of that film is, as we have mentioned, just a music video, basically.
Yeah, very good one, but a music video. But yeah, I must admit, like, after all that, could I recommend it? Not really. I mean, if you do like five centimeters a second, I mean, I'm coming from it from the view of someone who at one point would have rated it 7 out of 10, now rates it 4 to 5 out of 10. But like, if you want to see more of the characters, then there is more to mine here. And it was nice to like slip in with Akari, with Sumida, Kanae again for a bit, even though it did drive me more nuts. It's nice, you know, it's a decent sized tome. I got it digitally, so I got it it's a nice quality book. The backgrounds are great. There's a lot of really nice backgrounds that are kind of lavishly and almost like one connected pen stroke look. You know, there's a lot of pen work and a lot of careful detail. But one thing I'll say is definitely that while it does look very nice, the characters look very flat and also very static. There's not a lot of, like, even when actual running or action or movement is happening in the manga, it doesn't feel very dynamic, and it's a bit weird. Like, it feels almost like a slideshow rather than an actual, like, you know, graphic novel on the page, as it were, an actual comic. So it's very weird and very strange that way, where it feels like you're watching like a very strangely presented slideshow on a single page rather than a comic. As I say, like, there's not much flow to the whole thing, which is very bizarre it took me a while to get my chops around that. I don't know if you quite agree it fully about Andy, but that's how it came across to me.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me a little bit of like when you're a kid and you had like the Ladybird book version of like some kids film that you'd seen that were just like taking stills from said film and just like putting text over it to explain what happens. Like, it's clearly, it feels like it's been lifted from another medium and kind of dropped into the manga format without going through every step of that process somehow. So I think that's kind of why you end up with that feeling, like, this is, feels like stills from something else, because it does feel like it's been lifted quite deliberately from the source material in a way that's maybe, you know, doesn't always do it its service.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's quite off the leash. Do you remember any manga when that was coming out, when you'd get like like a Tokyo Pop volume and it was just stills from an anime, like cleaned up a wee bit? That same effect, but much better detail in backgrounds on this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and also like some of the dialogue on an individual panel by panel, line by line level is clunky. Like, even the like title drop on page like 36 ish is just like, Where'd that come from? Are you both still human? Is the secret that you're both actual robots who just have to like vomit out strange script? So yeah, something weird there with the dialogue, of which there is a lot. In fact, in some cases, it feels like you're having like 2+ speech bubbles a panel, and it gets a bit tiring.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, yeah, some of the layout of that I found got a little bit hard as well. Like, when there's so much text going on in a single panel, it's like it felt like it was really getting shoehorned in, especially probably thanks to the English translation, because you can fit a heck of a lot more Japanese text into a speech bubble than English. But it did feel a bit of a struggle in places where it got a bit too dialogue heavy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, like a Medica Box style thing where the entire backdrop is words, but... You do have the case where a page is more speech bubble than actual anything else, which is when you start to go a bit, I've seen this 3 times already. I'm starting to get a bit tired. But yeah, so I don't know. Summing it up, you know, I've already said a lot, but I feel kind of annoyed at myself for suggesting this because I ended up not really enjoying it. I had to kind of push myself put through it several points, and I'm just kind of glad the weather's been very nice because it meant I could sit outside and read it and with a nice drink. So the reading experience, quite good, B+. Book itself, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly, like, I still have a pretty decent fondness for 5 centimeters per second, and I think... If you do have that fondness for it, like this is definitely a must read if you're still big on 5 centimeters, because it does give you a lot of context that is simply not there in that film. I mean, you know, particularly in that final act, you know, you do get a feeling of Tono's state of mind and you know, what's wrought from it that is simply not there in the original film. And I still kind of like the fact that it's a somewhat unique story. Like, it's not really so much a love story as about a story of its aftermath. And that's kind of not something that you see very often. So it is at least a little different from the norm. But yeah, like it does have its flaws in its characters. And, you know, it certainly doesn't knock it out of the park. But if you're looking for a companion piece to that film and it's something that you still hold fondly, then it's definitely worth checking out on that count, if nothing else.
Yeah, I can back that up. I mean, I'm still glad I read it in a weird way, because I wanted to see what else was in here as a companion to the movie. And also, you know, having watched the movie quite a few times, wanting to see, you know, what they could do to it. Just that, you know, it turns out some of that was just as annoying as the movie was itself. Whoops. But no, I didn't. Yeah, it's weird. It's also like long, you know, like I say, 470 pages. It's a big old thing. But as I say, you know, as Andy said, much better than I. But, you know, go for it if interested. Another thing to mention is that in a previous Comixology sale, I picked up Voices of Distance Star, the manga version, and the Garden of Words manga version. And now I'm slightly side-eyeing them. So we'll see what those are like. Yeah, cool. But no, that was, I took a lot of notes for this. I used up like half a notepad on this thing, and not a very large one, I admit, but woof. Yeah, it got a bit wild with my like trying to get my thoughts down. I think, and apologies for the rather stupid way of phrasing it, it kind of left me with a very strange like feeling of, to use a phrase, Murgiger from Bravely Default, where, you know, it's just like teeth grindy, want to do something about it, Murgiger. Anyway, that's the Elliot Page rating scale, I suppose. But anyway, enough of that. Sorry to go so long. But Andy, I'm very curious about what you think about the next thing we read. And also, well, I don't want to spoil anything. You go for it.
Yes, so yeah, my pick for this podcast was So I'm a Spider, So What? Volume 1, the manga edition thereof, because as mentioned on the previous podcast, I kind of didn't realize it was a light novel to start with until Elliot pointed it out, but hey-ho. So I'm a Spider, So What? is another banger in that all-popular isekai, aka alternate world genre, but please don't turn off, because, you know, I know we're all fed up of those at this point, and, you know, we've been around the houses. I feel like we've kind of been around the houses in the way that the little sister genre was a few years ago, where we kind of had Ora Emo was successful, everything blew up around that, and then we kind of went through the whole gamut right the way through to kind of parodies making fun of the genre with stuff like My Little Sister Can Read Kanji, and then somehow we kind of like veered right back around to taking that kind of storytelling seriously again with like stuff like Aramanga Sensei, but we're kind of, I feel like we're currently on that trajectory with the whole isekai genre, where we've had the serious stuff, we've had the sort of Online, the Overlords, the ReZeros, now, particularly in kind of terms of manga and light novel, we're now in the kind of parody element of that, where we've got stuff like, you know, Reborn as a Vending Machine, I Wander the Dungeon, etc., etc. And So I'm a Spy to Say What kind of, but not entirely, kind of sits in that sort of parody genre. So the story is basically about a relatively normal high school girl who I believe does have a name, because it seems to turn up towards the end of this volume in like the some of the kind of afterword and bonus materials, but I don't believe she's actually named in this volume. But it kind of doesn't matter, because
she doesn't name herself in particular.
Yes, exactly. So she's a pretty standard high school girl. Like, you know, she's a bit of a loner. She's a bit of a gamer, but, you know, she's not kind of crazy, complete shut in or kind of off the deep end or anything like that. And she's just in her classroom, kind of having a bit of a afternoon snooze, as you do, because, you know, these things happen. And then I guess I can only assume that this story is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because it seems like the end of Infinity War happens. Basically, she's kind
of... Well, I'm done. I haven't watched a single one of those. Sorry.
Well, someone will hopefully get the joke. So basically, she's kind of seemingly obliterated, and then kind of comes around not really knowing what the heck is going on. Like, she's there, she's alive, but like everything is dark and she seems to be trapped. And she figures out a way to get out of this kind of thing that's entombed her, only to discover that she's been reborn as a spider, and she's part of this whole kind of morass of spiders that are sort of running around and eating one another, so on and so forth. And so she kind of escapes from that and basically figures out that she's trapped in a kind of video game-esque world where she is a spider and she has to live as such. And the interesting thing about this book, and I'm kind of curious as to whether it continues in this regard throughout, is that it is really nothing but internal monologue. Like, there are no other characters of note, or no other characters that really speak in this volume. It's really just her own internal monologue as she goes about her business. And there are so many ways that this could kind of go wrong. Like, you know, when you have a single character as the focus, like, I was constantly worried that it would go into the whole, like, maudlin, like, oh, I wasted my life as a human. Like, you know, this is me getting my comeuppance. This is karma. This is what I deserve. But it never really does that. Like, there's it's kind of one little moment where she sort of trips into that kind of negative spiral, and then she's just like, ah, what the heck am I on about? I just need to get on with this. Mm. And at the same time, like, it could have gone off the other end of being like having a main character that's super snarky and comedic, and with every pun intended, like a kind of Spider-Man type figure that just like quips at everything. But somehow this volume kind of gets the balance of the main character just right. Like, it's just really entertaining kind of watching her just like running around as a spider and reacting to stuff and figuring out how to move forward and kind of figuring out like the rules and mechanics of this world. And it's all pretty simple stuff, really. Like, when you break it down, you know, she's just having to kind of hunt stuff to sate her hunger. And, you know, there are various different enemies that have different attributes, if you like, to carry on with the video game parlance. And, you know, she figures out how to level up and the various skills and abilities that she can hone, and that's kind of it. But it's all really entertaining. Like, this is a book that I just ended up reading with a smile on my face pretty much the entire time. Like, it's incredibly charming, and you kind of just find yourself rooting for the main character and saying like, yeah, you know what, this is weirdly cool just watching this character just going around and doing their thing.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to like sort of add on to what you said there, but like, I came away from it definitely in the same regard of really wanting to cheer her on. Like, it's like, yeah, go for it. Yeah. Cause she's trying so damn hard. And that's like one of the things that I always love is the whole like Ganbaru spirit or whatever. And like the thing with the character in particular, as you mentioned, it is all from her point of view. And as you mentioned, it really, really helps that there isn't the like constant snark. It dips into a bit of woe is me, but then immediately goes, well, that's true. And whatever, it's not going to help me right now. So I've got that out of my system now. And like, even with Haruhi, if you remember, like Haruhi Season Mia, the like, you know, early noughties like mega hit show, and how even Kyon got really friggin' annoying after a while, especially once everyone ripped that off and started just making a snark lord main character, which is still funny every now and then, but really exhausting because you've seen it done already so many times. So like, I feel like we're now in this like weirdly blessed period of like meta and self-knowing isekai, where we've had the first wave, as you mentioned, we've had time for the reaction sort of level, and we're now back to the like self-aware meta level, where it's not just going, haha, look at this. It's now going, okay, yeah, we know about this and about the other greater context, but now we can do something more interesting with it. And that's kind of where this comes in, where, you know, like the main character, who the spider's character name, I don't know, I can't remember it, but like really kind of wanted to cheer her on, because like she's doing as hard as she can to try and survive and learn on her feet, her many feet, and kind of does get a rough time of it. Like in some cases she's basically only saved by like plot fear, but those are the mechanics that are built into the actual game world she has found herself in. And it's kind of nice that it kind of has that level of vulnerability, which is a bit harrowing at times, bless her, but it's nice to have that degree of like, you know, the systems are not your friend, they're not your foe, you know, you're not just suddenly gonna ask pull a second sword out of your back. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm a spider, so what? So like in all regards, it's like, oh, so what, that's all you got, go have fun. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also a very kind of human element, I feel, to the way all of that is played. Just the kind of like shrugging and getting on with that aspect. Like, I kind of suspect that with something as ridiculous as that to happen to your average person, like after a period of figuring out what the heck was going on, you would probably just like lean into it and just say, okay, well, I guess this is my life now, and you'd just go with it rather than, you know, try to say, right, well, I need to get to the center of this universe to fix everything. You'd probably just like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But the other part I like is kind of the way that it sort of plays with moments where the character gets overconfident or maybe a little bit cocky. It's like, oh yeah, well, I know how to deal with this particular problem now. This is kind of like easy mode for me, and then just kind of falls into some kind of pitfall that ends with her screwing it up and being like, fuck. It's kind of like a meld of sort of normal human behavior and kind of video game playing, where you kind of get into this routine like, yeah, I know how to do this, and then you just screw everything up royally because you kind of get a bit cocky and think, yeah, I can just do all this, like, you know, with my eyes closed. So some of that stuff is really entertaining, because it just sort of, it moves the needle a bit. Like, it gets to the point where you think you can see how everything's going, and then something comes along to throw a bit of a curveball and be like, eh, it's not always this easy. Like, you know, it's very simple for a particular set of circumstances that you've dealt with a million times before to suddenly become like deadly serious just because like some other element has changed. So there's little moments like that that kind of keep it fresh and keep it moving as well, I think.
Yeah, it really gets a lot out of small victories. Like, it's small discoveries and small victories really matter a lot, and like it kind of again helps you want to cheer the character on, because it's like, oh man, you really fluff that one up, but I mean, what are you gonna do? Like, you got to move on, and you're on the middle of doing it. Like, it's nice in that regard that new things are constantly happening. And as you say, like by the end of the volume, I was like kind of almost chomping at the bit to buy volume two. So, well done, Andy. Thanks.
another victory.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. It was like I say, it was really fun, and I really quite enjoyed the art. There's a sort of softness, like a roundness to a lot of things, where things are very like, you know, the one thing that's kind of funny, the one thing that looks really wretched is the humans you see, who look like, yeah, they look like transplants from Vinland Saga or something. They're all like weird, ugly, rough bearded dudas with like, who are often lit by torchlight, which doesn't really do them any favors. But it's all set in this massive underground cave complex. It's kind of cool. It has a lot of nice, interesting, like, let me explain style cutouts and panels where it sort of goes, okay, for expedience sake, here's the current state of where our character is and what's going on. Now back to our previously mentioned adventures. And, you know, it's kind of wild that they managed to make the character look cute, like as a spider. Like, it's like, ah, oh, look, it's our little spider friend. She's cute, kind of, even though she's got eight eyes, I guess.
Yeah, and there's a great comedy that comes out of that as well, in terms of like the number of times that the artist somehow manages to kind of like take this spider with, you know, a human mind basically, and kind of pose the spider in very human ways. Like, there's a great moment where she's just kind of like lounging around in her web and just like, oh, I'm just gonna like chill out at the end of the day, and it's that perfect kind of human pose of like, yeah, I'm just gonna chill out on the sofa, but with a spider. And there are a few moments like that where it's just kind of spider does human pose thing that just like always got a little giggle out of me.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, it, one thing about the art is it even like, even though it's really cutesy, there is like violence, you know, spider's got to eat. And some of the damage, battle damage that the spider gets receives is, oof, I felt real bad. I was like, man, this is a bit of a banger of a first chapter to like mortally wound your main character like that. So, but yeah, it's a really good romp. And I say the main thing I like about the art is it's very restrained in a weird way. Like it's got this roundness, it's got a economy of like surfaces, but it also has an economy of colors where it's like black, white, like gray tone. And through that, it kind of gives things a depth that is kind of surprising for when you break it down and analyze it like a bloodless idiot. You look at it and go, oh, this is actually quite plain and quite simple, but it looks nice. Like it imparts a depth and like a 3D attribute to the characters, which is quite impressive. And kind of really helps with the fact that it does only have so many colors. And that's one of the things that I really like about it, is just you can look at a panel and you can see the layout of something, especially when, like, you know, you've got spider webs, the spider itself, a form of prey. You've usually got poison spit flying around everywhere. There's a lot of weird vomit in this series. So all that stuff kind of all works together, and you do get like weird. I'm kind of looking forward to the anime of this now, but like if there ever is one, because man, like the dynamic like 3D like friggin' poison bolt throwing, like what the dickens.
Yeah, I mean the weird thing about it is kind of when I started in on this volume, I kind of felt like I'm probably going to get bored of the visuals of this pretty quickly, but somehow it manages to keep it interesting and engaging throughout. And I guess kind of likewise the story, like my one concern about it is how long can this go before I'm going to get bored of it. Like I'm almost, much as I'm kind of tempted to pick up future volumes, it's like where does it go from here? Like I feel like there's only so much you can do with what you've got currently, so you're gonna have to change things up. But if you change things up, are you gonna lose what's charming me about this first volume?
Totally. And also, like, in a more sort of long-term format, like what's the end state of this? Like it's not like One Piece where you've got to find the treasure and whoop, done, pack it up, lads, we can go home now. It's like, well, how does a spider finish a story? Like does she like how do you do that? Like, you know, it's kind of one of these things where I look at it and go, I don't quite know how. I mean, even things that are also in the isekai sort of like almost meta sort of version, like Konosuba, like that at least has like a whole like, yeah, go kill the demon lord, whatever. Like, and knowing that series, they'd probably do it in an OVA or something as a joke and then just go, ah, oh, you won already, good job, bye. So yeah, it's weird. God, where's more Konosuba? Anyway, but no, I really, really like this series. I'm really glad I got to read it. It was certainly cheered me up a bit. Like, I read this before I read 5 centimeters per second, and then after I read 5 centimeters per second, I went back and read this again because I was like, no, I want to read this again so I'm fresh for the podcast, and I want to cheer myself up. So, yeah, spider hygiene.
I feel like I read this in the right order because I did read 5 centimeters first and then this, and that seemed to work way better. But yeah, I mean, again, like much like Promised Neverland that we talked about in the last show, like this was a series that I'd seen people just kind of mentioning in passing, usually with some kind of positive adjective, and nobody'd really said anything more beyond that that made me think, ah, I should pick it up. But having read it, like I can see why people have been enjoying it, and I'd be curious to at least hear kind of whether it just continues down the same track or whether it has some twists and turns to it that changes things up, because I kind of want to read more, but like I say, I'm really worried that it's going to run out of road pretty early on.
Yeah, because there's quite a few light novels to it, so there's a decent amount of material to actually adapt, but the quality of that material, I'm not aware. The one thing that is a saving grace is that because it's a Yen Press title, it's on Kobo for £3.50 a volume, so it doesn't cost that much if you don't mind getting a digital version. And that's kind of like, you know, getting towards £3 is my like impulse purchase tier, quite frankly. So, you know, if I ever have a moment of weakness or I'm bored, that might get bought, frankly. But not before I've read some other stuff that I bought earlier before this weekend. Guess who now has 3 volumes of Laidback Camp to read? But yeah, so unless you want any final thoughts on spiders, Andy?
I mean, I have lots of thoughts about spiders, but not about this particular book, so we can leave it at that, I think.
good okay, yeah. So yes, a thing with spiders in that you don't want to take a slipper to. That's my Elliot Page reaction, I suppose. Also, don't do that. Spiders are fine. They're keeping flies out of your house. Anyway, so what are we going to be talking about next time in 2 weeks? So that's the 19th of August. I did a maths A-level, I swear. We're going to be talking about something else. So for my next thing I'm going to read, I have nominated Delicious in Dungeon, which is now on its fifth or sixth volume, and is a series of some acclaim about a bunch of dungeoneers in like a typical fantasy D&D style setting, and they go into a dungeon and beat monsters up and then cook them. And that's basically the crux of it. There's a very big foodie element to it. This has been boosted by a number of people on Twitter whose opinions I trust, and it's reached a lot of sort of like signal boosting in that regard. Also, it's on Yen Press, so it's £3.50. So that's kind of why I went for this. Curious. I've never been too hot on it before whenever I've heard people talk about it. So this is kind of my sort of excuse to buy a volume and read it to see if if it's to my taste. Ha ha. Ugh, sorry. Anyway, Andy, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I mainly picked this one in the hope that you'd read the title, but I guess I failed on that attempt. So I have picked the first one of Dead Demons Destruction. I probably missed a dare off of
you
that.
You did, but, you missed a dare.
Well, there you go.
You touched it.
Which, I mean, all I really know about this is, I was reminded by somebody else I saw talking about it on Twitter. I was like, oh yeah, this is an Inio Asano thing. I should probably read this because Inio Asano. So yeah, I really want to check out the first volume of it.
Yeah, Inio Asano, creator of manga that I love but cannot finish because it makes me turn into a bawling child. Ask yes. me about how many times I've tried to read Solanin and failed because I've had to put it down. And this Dead Demons Destruction is like, it's been burning up these sort of like mindshare stakes at the moment. And like, I've had it be described as like the most millennial manga. I'm curious to see that. Also, the secret is I would have picked this, but you got to the Google Doc before me, Andy. So if you'd have held your fire a little bit, I would have had to have pronounced it first.
You see, I feel like I both won and lost there because I kind of figured that you'd pick this at some point, so that's why I put it on the Google Doc first. But yeah, then I had to say the name and I screwed up. So a Pyrrhic victory at best.
Well, it's going to be a victory because we both get to read it and see what we think about it, and so will you. If you fancy reading along with either of those and sending us your thoughts, you're more than welcome to. It'd be lovely to hear your thoughts. We have an email address now, which is screentoneclub@gmail.com. And we also have a Twitter feed, which is @screentoneclub, all one word. No weird underscores or anything like that. We're kind of just still shaking the dust off of it and getting it up into gear. But feel free to add that and you can talk to us. This is the part of the show where we talk about the release schedule for the next 2 weeks. Having scanned it, there's not a lot I can really see that needs calling out. There's a Boogie Pop Phantom light novel coming out, which, hey, Boogie Pop Phantom's coming out after all this time. Who'd have thought it? Like, yeah, it's kind of wild, honestly. Like,
I mean, they're making a new anime. Apparently, this is the big return of Boogie Pop Phantom. Who could have seen this coming?
Man, I remember about Boogie Pop Phantom was watching it in like the third meeting of the anime club when I was at uni and kind of hating it, and then mentioning this and getting basically scorned for a good hour. Also coming out in 2 days is volume 7 of All Round Omegaru, which is a mixed martial arts manga I frigging love and may have to spring on you at some point for this podcast, Andy. You have been warned. Also volume 2 of the light novel of Toradora. There you go, Andy. There's something
yes.
for
you. I've bought the first volume but not read it yet, so that's probably a reminder that I should probably do that. And yeah, looking at this list, I mean, there's I really should kind of get deeper into the manga of Descending Stories, aka Shōgen Rokurakugo Shinju, because I mean the anime of that is amazing, and I should probably see what the source material of that's like. And I feel like this is also my constant reminder of like, oh, Space Brothers is really cool, I should read that sometime.
And there's a lot of Space Brothers, dude.
Yeah, then I see the number 32 by it and then kind of change my mind because that's a lot of manga.
Yeah, whenever I see it on sale I think, oh, Space Brothers is £3 a volume, and then I check how many volumes it is and go but I'm at the risk of sounding a bit mean and a bit lame, I'm kind of hoping, praying / crossing fingers there may be a humble bundle is for it at some point. But don't think that there's no inside knowledge there. Like, don't think that I know anything there, for the love of God.
I wonder if it's one of those series I'd love to know, like, how it's doing sales wise because it's like, it's, I feel like everybody I know who has read it, it has a lot of nice things to say about it, but that's not, also not a whole lot of people, so I would love to see where it sits in the kind of grand scheme of all things manga.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's what but with Sharingan Roku, Rakugo Shinju, Descending Stories, I swear to goodness, that volume one came out and everyone was like, oh, Rakugo, the book version, the manga version is coming out. And then I blinked and suddenly we're now on a volume eight. And I'm like, whoa, oh God, I'm already behind watching the actual anime. I still haven't finished the first series. So yeah, you can kind of tell what my kind of mindset with that series is. Love it dearly. It takes a lot out of me to watch it. So, hey, yeah,
That's fair.
Yeah, it takes a lot out of you. Really good, but oof, yeah. So anyway, that's what we're reading for next time in 2 weeks. We've also got a website, screentone.club. That's where you'll find the podcast and all the various links to the various podcatchers, my blog, Andy's blog. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Stitcher, I think. More sources as we plow through submission processes. As mentioned at the top, thank you to everyone who's left us a rating or a review. They are massively appreciated. If you fancy leaving a rating or a review, those would be greatly appreciated, wherever podcasts are bought or sold or seen. But yeah, that'd be really lovely. The only last thing to do is to plug ourselves. I'm Elliot. I'm at Elliot Page on the Twitters, and Andy.
And I am Andy Henley, and you can find me on Twitter at Hannahs1979.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I feel quite happy now, Andy, that I've managed to like get all of that 5 centimeters out of me. Like
you've reached catharsis.
Kinda, like, I don't know, like I'm not meaning to jump back and belabor this all over again, but I wrote so many notes, dude, it's ridiculous. Like I had to chew on the fat and get it out of me, you know, like,
I can appreciate that. All I will say is that Garden of Words manga isn't going to read itself.
Oh god damn it, Andy. Okay, well, one time when I run out of other things to read, like Fire Force or something. Also, maybe Soul Eater. That's on Kobo now as well. All of Soul Eater. There's a lot of it. Anyway, that's enough gabbing. So thank you very much for listening again. Third time we've tried to finish the podcast. Been me, Elliot Page, and my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Handley.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you and good night.
Bye, everyone.